Hello, hello, hello. I'm your Joy Behar hostess with the mostest in quarantine, Michael Munoz, and welcome to In Yo Mouth!
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood
to lick it right, lick it good, show you how to look.
God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets.
So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo
Got the goosebumps.
Hey there, and welcome back, folks. Once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And how are we doing? Can you believe this is, I think, week six? I think I figured it out, folks. Week six of this quarantine, this pandemic. How is everyone doing out there? I myself, Lord, I have my good days and my bad days. You know, the anxiety is real. I live in 120 square feet in Times Square, so the loneliness can be real sometimes. But you know what? I've said this before on the pod. I just try to find the joy through it all. I'm dancing with Mark Kinamura every day at 5 o'clock. That brings me joy. I try to get out and get some fresh air. That also brings me joy. What is bringing you joy out there? Let us find the joy together, and we will make it through. And you know what's joyful about today? Well, today is Wednesday, and it's a little bit of a rainy day here in New York City, but it's also National Jelly Bean Day. Yes, beep, 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 beep. So, if anything, that is cause to celebrate today. But on a completely different note, today's podcast, I have invited Michael Stackleather on to join me in a minute. Michael Stackleather and his brother have opened up a restaurant in the East Village called Post. It's been open since 2016, and they're this tiny restaurant, and they're really, really popular for their biscuits and their nachos, their pulled pork nachos, and they have a bunch of vegan dishes. But what I wanted to do today on the pod is have an inside look from someone in the restaurant industry who's struggling, you know, who has had to let go of their staff and how they're supporting their staff, but who also, is doing something great for their community. They are providing meals to our healthcare workers, to the fire department, and I just kind of wanted an inside look to that because, you know, out there we're hearing these stories and we're seeing people talk about these stories via Instagram, but I feel like we're not getting, you know, an inside look. So I thought it would be really interesting today to have him on the pod and talk about his journey and what is happening from the inside of the restaurant business. So without further ado, let's get him on the phone and let's get cooking because I'm really excited to talk to him today.
Hello, I'm here. Hi.
Oh, hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Michael?
Good. Thanks for coming on and taking time out of your very busy schedule, what I'm assuming is very busy for you during this time. So I really appreciate you taking out the time to join me on my little old gay podcast. So thank you. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're recording this on a Monday, but Wednesday, we need to start as we always start here on In Your Mouth, Mikey. And I need to wish you Wednesday's Happy National Food Day, which is Happy National Jelly Bean Day.
Jelly beans. I love jelly beans.
Do you? I feel like people are really bothered by jelly beans. You either are a fan or you're not. There's no middle ground.
Yeah. Either you're pro jelly bean or anti jelly bean. You know, I really do like black jelly beans. I don't know why, but I love those. Are my favorite black jelly beans.
Yeah. Yeah, well, licorice. You know what they say, the blacker the berry, the sweeter the
Exactly.
So you like a licorice jelly bean. Okay.
I do. It's I've always liked that flavor for some reason.
Yeah, not for me. Jelly Belly makes a really good strawberry jam jelly bean.
I've had that one. That one's a good one.
That I'm really into. Are you a big candy person?
I can be at times, but not usually. I'm more of an ice cream fan. That's what I am. I'm an ice cream fan.
Yeah. I am a little lactose intolerant, but during this quarantine, I've been beasting on some Van Leeuwen. Is that how you say it? They make some of the best vegan ice cream I've ever had.
They do. So delicious, makes really good vegan ice cream too. You should check that one out. The salted caramel is my favorite.
Yeah, I've been just living my vegan ice cream dreams with this pistachio ice cream from Van Leeuwen and the mint chip.
Oh, I'm gonna have to check it out.
So definitely, definitely. And before we move on this, did you know on this day in gay history, because I love to call on our gay ancestors, you know, so we learn from the past, so we don't make mistakes in the future. Today is not such a happy one. In 2005, HB 1515, which would have made it illegal to fire an employee based on sexual orientation, is defeated in the Washington State Senate by one single vote. Isn't that something else with everything else going on in the world? Whether you can work just because you're gay or not is an issue, you know.
I mean, sexual orientation, you know, making decisions like that on people's sexual orientation is beyond me. It's beyond me.
And I mean, as a gay business owner, could you imagine just having the state like just legislate whether you can even own that business or just be like,
exactly,
you know,
exactly.
What was that like? Kind of even be like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many hurdles that the gay community has to go through. Anyways, I mean, and it's still, you know, it's 2020, you know, and there's still hardships. I mean, what you just mentioned just was literally just 6 years ago or 5 years ago. So it was pretty recent, you know, but I'm optimistic that there's going to be new legislation that, you know, propels, you know, this country forward when it comes to, you know, LGBTQ.
Yeah, we can only hope, especially during this time and this madness. But moving on to like happier things, and speaking of you being a gay business owner, you own a restaurant with your brother called Post, right?
Yes.
And now I want to know how two military like family brothers from that have been moving all over the place, end up in New York, opening a restaurant serving. A very eclectic menu of biscuits and vegan items. And then, like, I hear your nachos are really great, too.
The vegan nachos are amazing. And the regular nachos, the pulled pork nachos, are very good. See, we have something for everyone, you know, and it's, we're all inclusive, you know.
Well, that's the way I like my restaurants and my menus to be.
Exactly.
All inclusive. But so,
all inclusive.
So from, in reading your story, from Seattle, your family settled for a while, then down to North Carolina. What like kind of, you know, just made you want to move, you and your brother want to move to New York, and then make you want to open up a restaurant in New York too? Because this is one of the hardest markets.
It is. And I think, with the help of naivety on our part, kind of like, you know, ushered us to where we are right now. We didn't really understand how hard it was going to be to open a restaurant, but we just went for it anyways. You know, we just took it day by day. We did the things that we needed to do to get this accomplished, and we learned a lot. But speaking on my past, we were just two Seattle grunge kids, you know, running around with like red hair, you know, and oversized sweatshirts and oversized pants, hanging out with a whole bunch of skaters. And the whole...
some Jenkos, some elephant ear Jenkos.
Yeah, totally, yes. And we're just saying...
I remember.
I know, yeah. It was quite a stylish time.
Well,
I
mean,
Seattle.
We're going to use that term loosely.
Yeah. Yes. Well, at the moment, we thought we were stylish, but, you know, pictures tend to prove us wrong. So, but my parents fell into some financial difficulty. They, you know, bit off more than they could chew because there were five kids. One, I believe, had moved away. Our oldest sister moved away to Florida, but still, it was a big house, and they just couldn't keep up with it, you know. And so, to simplify their lives, my parents decided to move back to North Carolina, to where my dad's family is located. And we ended up in this small town called Sneed's Ferry. And it was sort of like 45 minutes north of Wilmington, North Carolina. And there was one intersection. And then there was one stoplight. There was our mobile home park, a storage facility, a gas station, and a pie factory. And that was pretty much it.
So it sounds like a bustling metropolis.
It was, I mean, there was something going on every day.
I love that there was a pie factory.
The Hostess Pie Factory was there. They made the apple and the cherry pies. And that's pretty much the majority of the 300 people that lived in the town, either their, you know, spouses or siblings or children. That's where they all went to go work. So that was pretty much their future. And I had two interviews there. I went on two interviews. It was a strange interview. The person that was giving me the tour, I was there when there was a huge storm running through North Carolina, and the power went off while the whole conveyor belt was going. They were making the pies. And then he told me to back up because the power comes on fairly quickly because they had the backup generator, whatever. So I backed up quickly, and then he's all like, yes, I had an employee lose an arm because he was still, you know, placing things on the conveyor belt when the power came on. So it took his arm off when it came back on. And after that, I decided I wasn't going to work there. I didn't want my life to be, you know, a pie factory.
You weren't like that employee in The Tiger King who lost her arm and went back to work.
Yes, I was too smart to like fall for that. So yeah.
So you grabbed your brother and a suitcase and a dream, and you moved to New York City.
He moved to New York City just to get the scope of it first, and then I followed thereafter. And yeah, we packed up our Oshkosh bagosh luggage and just like headed up north. And here we are. We've been here ever since.
Yeah. And now you have this cute little restaurant in the East Village on Avenue B. And it's super popular, right?
Or yes.
You know, always bustling. You can't get in for brunch.
No.
And I refuse to wait on the line. But now that we're connected, maybe I... after the quarantine is over,
I can get the stuff for
those biscuits that I've been hearing about and those pulled pork nachos that, you know, the entire internet is just raving about. How did you decide on the cuisine? And like, is it your Southern roots? And why isn't it like your Filipino roots didn't come into play there? Or is it like hidden?
In the beginning, we were toying with the idea of opening up a cafe. So we wanted to do coffee and like, you know, maybe some pastries or something like that. You know, I mean, it was the whole idea was still, we were still formulating it. There was like some idea of bagels being thrown around and then outsourcing bagels from Black Seed Bagels and just having paninis and quiches. But me and my brother, really, we finally sat down and we're all like, listen, instead of trying to enter this bagel game where there are places in this city that's been making bagels since the late 1800s, we're going to jump into the bagel game and, you know, think that we're going to make our stamp in that. So let's just try to create something that we do good. And we used to, believe it or not, we used to skip school and go home and just, while everybody was at work and, you know, the other kids were at school, we would just sit there and we'd bake. And we made really good biscuits. So we knew how to make biscuits, and we knew how to make them very good. We knew how to make biscuits and gravy. So I think that's where the idea of the whole biscuit menu came into play, you know? And we're just big fans of food. We like food to be simple. We like food to be fresh, you know? So what really happened was the idea of a cafe kind of morphed into a restaurant. And then we were just dragged along with it and we had to keep up pace. So
now spending a little bit of time in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, I myself learned that there are different types of biscuits, like there are cat head biscuits. And then I don't know. Do you make a specific type of biscuit here?
We make, it's our Aunt Merle's recipe, and it's just a good old Southern buttermilk biscuit. We get a little adventurous with maybe some ingredients, like adding sage or rosemary to it. But the original buttermilk biscuit that we make is just, it's like, we don't want to mess with a good thing. And maybe in the future, I mean, because we are expanding and, you know, we're fortunate enough to have that opportunity to expand. I think we will play with, you know, other ingredients, you know, and just really kind of spread our wings when it comes to that.
Yeah. And now speaking of expanding, I know that you're moving. And how is it A, possible to move during this time, right? Because this must be a really, really crazy time for you.
And yeah. And
I know personally that you're still working 6 days a week doing takeout and pickup. Mm-hmm. And you're also feeding the health workers during this time and helping your community out. Like, how is this all possible?
We just really kind of like dug in deep, pulled up our boots. We went into self-preservation mode because this was an investment that me and my brother, you know, wholeheartedly, you know, gave everything to. And it's the only thing that we have. So of course we wanted to keep it going in, you know, hopefully we survive, you know, this horrible ordeal. But unfortunately, we had to fire everybody. It wasn't a large staff, but it was a staff that worked a lot of shifts. And that was kind of hard because we were their main source of income. We had 3 full-time employees and then 2 to 3 part-time employees, you know, so the ones that, you know, were working full-time kind of left out high and dry, you know. So It was unfortunate that we had to let them go. Of course, hopefully they all return to us when all this is lifted. But me and my brother started this restaurant. We worked the first couple of months, 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. We did this for the first couple of months. So the hours for us, like the 6 days a week, it's no big deal. I mean, we just want the restaurant to be okay. As far as the new space, that was something that was already set in motion, and it's really up to the landlords and how gracious they can be, you know, and I don't expect much from landlords in the city, but, you know, hopefully they do the right thing and, you know, understand the situation that we're all in. As far as, making our deliveries, we make 2 to 3 deliveries to hospitals. We both saw a segment on the news about, you know, restaurants giving to, people on the front lines and the medical, you know, profession. And so we wanted to try to help do our part. I mean, because we can make a lot of biscuits, we can make, you know, simple, you know, individually wrapped, you know, sandwiches where they don't have to worry about anybody else touching their food. We wanted to make it to where they had their own individual sandwich so they didn't have to worry about anybody else touching their sandwich. So we're all like, let's just run for it. A girl that lives in the building above us, she works at New York Presbyterian, she worked at Columbia. And she was all like, yes, you know, I'll tell my coworkers that were coming by with biscuits. And that's pretty much how it all got started. And then other people started to reach out, you know, and we decided to keep it up, you know. And then there's the fire station around the corner from our restaurant where we're going to take some biscuits to them tomorrow, trying to make that a weekly thing for them too, because
that's incredible. And it's been just incredible from my end, because I'm not only being in the hospitality industry for 21 years myself, but having a lot of connects in the restaurant industry just via my work and then via the podcast and via my Instagram, just seeing all that these restaurants, including yours, are doing to help their surrounding communities. And I often wonder in this time, because obviously the revenue isn't coming in like it used to be, how is this sustainable for you? How are you making this sustainable? Because, you know, that's money that's going out, you know, but there's a need to help there, you know, and you have to at this point.
Like, yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, I would like to thank all the donors that have donated, because we created a GoFundMe for this whole, you know, project to get the biscuits out to the healthcare workers. So thank you to all the donors that really stepped up and donated to this cause.
That's amazing. And we'll link that out at the end of the pod too. So if anybody out there still has work and is working and has the funds to donate to that GoFundMe, I want to be sure to get them to you as well.
That would be amazing. Also, we decided to do a Venmo account too. And a lot of people, I want to thank them too, the people that donated to the Venmo account, just so we could, you know, give our employees a little bit of money and kind of like fan it out throughout this whole situation. So they still have like a little chunk of money coming to them that might help them out with groceries and stuff like that. And so we have that in place for the employees too, in case they don't get their stimulus checks. So we have that too. So I'm really grateful for the donors of that too. And it's mainly a lot of our regulars, you know, that that miss us, and you know, they want to do all that they can. So we are around when things get back moving. So I'd like to thank them too.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, and it's kind of a testament, maybe a testament to your community, but a testament to New Yorkers in general, just kind of rallying. So
you
as a business rallying for the community, and your community itself rallying for you to rally for the community. It's this really beautiful cycle that's happening that I'm seeing, not only with you now, but with a bunch of other people as well. I don't know if you've discovered the Ate It app, but it's a food. It's a new way to discover food in New York City, and they have the restaurant.
Yeah.
They have their restaurant revival T-shirt that they're selling. That 100% of the proceeds are going to, you know, restaurants like yours to keep you know, small businesses afloat. Mm-hmm. Because Lord knows this stimulus money is running out.
Well, you know? We applied for the stimulus package. I think it was rolled out on March 27th, and we had filled out the application on the 28th, and all our paperwork was submitted and everything, and we felt like we were on top of that. But even a day later, I mean, that money was already allocated before our application was even considered. It went so fast. So I think there's a lot of mom and pop restaurants in this city that are just feeling the full brunt of, you know, not even seeing a stimulus check or a PPP fund loan, whatever it may be. And it's just, those are the restaurants that really, you know, need the most help. And I'm just afraid that the larger entities in the restaurant, you know, world have kind of, you know, sucked up all the funds. And I just hope like the smaller mom and pop shops aren't left out in the wind, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the city, once this is all over, when this is over, will certainly be a very, very different place. I know just by me, there was a bunch of places about to open that I was really excited about, and that who knows if they've even made it through.
The precarious, that's one of the most precarious situations to be in. Like, you know, investing everything you've got into a space, and then just like right when you're about to open, this just kind of like hits. I feel for those people, you know, and I just hope it works out for them too, because that's probably a really tough situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's once again a vicious domino effect of a people in the restaurant industries, your staff losing their jobs, into you figuring out how to keep it moving and how to keep that revenue coming in, as well as helping your community out. Meanwhile, trying to figure out how to pay your rent, because Lord knows the rent in these buildings for the tiniest spaces, not cheap.
I know. I'm avoiding my landlord. He comes every morning to organize the trash and do some paperwork. And I've been avoiding him for the past couple of days.
Well, no,
I'm all like, I don't know what to tell him. I'm like, I'm going to have your money soon, I guess. I don't know. It's just, you know, I just want to remind him that, you know, there's a pandemic going on, you know, hopefully he'll have his money, you know, soon. But I think a lot of people are in the same situation, and I'm in my head a little bit. I know these landlords know what's going on, and they don't really expect, you know, the rent check as usual. Like the timing of the rent checks is, it's going to be a lot different for them. So
yeah, everything's thrown off. And I mean, it's, once again, it's you paying your rent and then them paying the taxes on the building and then so on.
Yeah.
It's this vicious cycle. And hopefully, I know, because I'm a true believer in the karma of it all, that all the good that you are doing will come back to you in this sense of, you know, in this time of trouble. But I want to take a little break right now just to lighten it up a bit and take you into my favorite part of the podcast and the audience's favorite part of the podcast. I hope you're ready, Mikey, for bit of food news update. Food news.
Ooh, honey,
you ain't ready, girl. Spill the tea.
News update.
Khloe Kardashian has been buying groceries for senior citizens at Trader Joe's. Well, the Kardashians are back at it, Mikey. Are you a Kardashians fan?
It really depends on the day. It really depends on the day. I mean, but usually I'm not. But,
I was only a fan for about like 3.3 seconds, and it was about 2 weeks ago when I think it was Khloe and Kim got into that slap fight.
Yes. There's like this little video out there where Northwest kind of interrupts Kim on film, and it's the funniest little excerpt. Hopefully I can find it again, but it's pretty funny.
At least they're putting their money to good use, which I think they've been doing for a while. But apparently she's been doing this secretly and someone found her out, according to Delish.com.
Really?
Yeah, she's been quietly popping up at Trader Joe's and Ralph's stores across Greater Los Angeles and paying for groceries for the elderly. And then... beyond that, she also provided more than 200 gift cards for employees at all the locations.
That's sweet.
She's visited.
Yeah.
So, you know what? I'm here for this Kylie Jenner moment or Khloe Kardashian moment. I always get them really confused.
Me too.
You know?
Yeah. But you know what? I hope she's like throwing some... I love the ABC bars at Trader Joe's. They have these ABC bars. They're like these kind of peanut butter, multi-grain breakfast bars. I hope she's throwing those in the boxes because those are delicious.
Right. That and some of that cauliflower gnocchi.
Oh my goodness. Yes, that's so good.
It's delicious. Yeah. So it looks like we're here for you this week, Khloe Kardashian. Good job.
Good job, Khloe. You're awesome.
Dole is donating more than 2 million pounds of fresh produce in light of the coronavirus outbreak. I feel like we needed like uplifting food news this day of people much like you, you know, doing good for their communities. So, Dole has growers all over the world, and they have been making donations to food banks in places like New York, Philadelphia, Charlotte, Houston, Los Angeles, and San Diego. And in addition to these produce donations, Dole has also started issuing support to rural communities in Latin America, where much of its fruit is grown. And they're supplying their communities with staples like rice, beans, cooking oil, as well as masks, sanitizing gel, I can't speak all of a sudden, testing kits, and other health supporting supplies.
That's awesome.
You know? Yeah.
Good for them. I mean, the best comes out of people when things like this happen. And that's really good to hear.
Yeah, you know, I used to live for like a Dole fruit cup back in the day.
The fruit cocktail in the can with the maraschino cherries.
The maraschino cherries were the best part.
My mom used to make this, she called it fruit salad. I don't even know what kind of salad it's called. Is it even technically a salad? But she would call it a fruit salad, and she would get fruit cocktail, Dole fruit cocktail, cream cheese, a little bit of whipped cream, and she would mix it all up, and she would call it her fruit salad. And I mean, thinking about eating it now, I probably wouldn't touch it. But when I was a kid, that was a really good. It was so good.
In Your Mouth, listeners, I wish I had recorded the video of this, because just watching you remembering that fruit salad and what it tasted like, you can legit just...
It should be in everybody's recipe book.
Well, it's pretty simple. It was fruit cocktail.
Fruit cocktail, cream cheese, and whipped cream. There you go.
And we have nothing but time on our hands. So, you know what? Put that on your Instacart list. And thank you to Dole for doing good for its communities. Pringles has a new chicken and waffles chips that combine sweet and savory flavors. I picked this one for you too, just for the restaurant. A little chicken and waffle Pringles chip.
Oh yeah, yeah. I like the sweet and savory.
Are you now? Is Pringles a chip? Do you consider Pringles potato chip?
Yes, I do. Even though that's it's super up for debate. Processed. Yeah, I mean, if you close your eyes and then eat it, it's pretty much a potato chip.
You know, Pringles has come out with a lot of weird flavors, and
they're getting creative.
They are, and what better to do than to add to your junk food list during this quarantine than some Pringles chicken and
waffles. I always stare at the Pringles. I mean, whenever I want some salty junk food, it's the Pringles. It's the Pringles. Well, you know, I mean, a lot of them carry milk products now, because I myself am vegan, carry a lot of milk products. So I've got to stay away. I mean, I know I'm safe with the salt and vinegar and the original, but a lot of the other ones, like the pizza one, even if it's super duper dehydrated and packed up in the little cylinder, it still contains milk, which I don't understand, but you know,
So this wouldn't be on your list because it probably has dehydrated chicken on it.
It wouldn't be my first choice.
And how does one make chicken powder? Can we discuss this?
I don't know. I mean, I'm it's probably dried for months on end, you know, and then ground up to a powder.
Does it come from like chicken jerky? I'm Puerto Rican, and my mother always used these sazon packets, which
I love sazon. Yeah,
but it's pork. It's dehydrated pork and MSG essentially. Mm-hmm. And I've always wondered to myself, how did they make pork powder? Like, how does that even happen?
Yeah,
it's
a mystery.
It's but, one of you the know, many things I've been wondering.
Yeah, they do pack a lot of flavor in those little cubes. They really do. Like any kind of packet, I mean, they pack a lot of flavor into those.
Yes, I'm sure we're not finding that in your pulled pork recipe at all.
No.
Well, you know what? I think this is a great way to end a little bit of food news update. I hope you are very enlightened this morning, Mikey.
I am.
You know what? Speaking of, you know, positive things and you know, putting positive energy out there, what would you say is the most, like, beautiful thing or most, like, you know, interesting thing that you've seen during this time because you're working through this time?
The sense of community. It's always amazing to me. And I was here in 9/11, you know, and the sense of community. I mean, the majority of the days, New Yorkers can't be bothered. But like, you know, in in the face of crisis, we really do band together and, you know, make sure everybody's taken care of, everybody's, you know, safe, and, you know, everybody has what they need. You know, I mean, I think that's what I love about this city, you know.
Yeah.
And it gives me hope.
Yeah. I mean, I see it around me in my neighborhood of people distributing masks to the homeless.
And
I know I have a lot of drag queen friends who sew all their own costumes, and they're all sewing masks for healthcare workers.
Awesome.
and for their communities and so on and so forth. So I would agree with you that the sense of community in such a large city feels so small town sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
when we
band together and we're like, okay, we need to get some shit done.
Yeah. We need to make sure everybody's okay.
Yeah. What would you like to see at the end of this when we come through?
I would like to see, that's a very good question. I would like to see more charitable things happening around the city. You know, I think this really put a spotlight on how a lot of us are very vulnerable. So I would like to see a lot more, you know, charity events. And I think that's going to happen. I think everybody has their eye on one another. I mean, because this has never happened before. So I think New Yorkers have their eyes on each other.
Yeah, especially in the restaurant community. And now that I've asked you that question and not really thought about what my response would be, the restaurant community has really banded together in a way to kind of help the healthcare workers get healthy meals that aren't just fast food, and help our service workers and help our essential workers. And I would love to see, honk if you love the restaurants.
But
yeah. I would love to see a bigger banding together of the hospitality community to keep that momentum going, to keep our communities thriving, to keep, you know, there's so many hungry mouths in this city, from homeless to, you know, the children on the street, which most of them statistically are LGBTQ youth, you know, and keeping that momentum going once the revenue starts really coming in, and not forgetting about this time where the restaurant community has had a huge impact.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think like, you know, not a lot of people aren't going to get those stimulus checks, you know, and these people are, they're struggling with poverty, you know, and so they're not, a lot of them like are undocumented, you know, and they've been laid off work too. And the money is slowly going to run out, you know, and it's just, we just need to like help out the food banks and, you know, just to make sure everybody's okay, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I really want to thank you for this very interesting and vivid look from the inside, you know, because we see it all the time via Instagram. We're all at home. A lot of us are unemployed. And we hear the stories, but or we're seeing the stories via photos, but we're not really getting word from the inside, word from people like you who are living it day in and day out.
Yeah.
So I really want to thank you for sharing your story. Before we close out, I read a little something that you used to work at some of the gay bars in the
city.
Yes. I mean, which ones? And spill the dirty details, honey.
I was a bartender at I'm kind of dating myself, but I was a bartender at the Hole.
Oh.
On First Avenue. It was before it turned into the Cock. It was before it was the Cock, it was the Hole. And it was right next to Urge. And
folks,
then
there was a single light bulb in the Hole at one point. And
there
the
was
bar
trash bags on the walls, and it was just the dirtiest. I loved it though. I loved working there. I worked on Thursdays. Super Gulp Thursdays, we called it. And it was like $20 to get into the door. And I remember we would spray people with our soda hoses because they wouldn't leave tips.
Yeah, but it was also a hot box in there. because there was no ventilation.
None.
And like,
and it was dark.
It was dark, and someone would like light candles, which made it would make it even hotter. And then at one point, those candles would blow out, and like someone would like that light bulb. I think the bartender, the bar itself was on like beer cases.
Yes, right? Yes, it was.
Beer
it was
cases just, yeah. and like plywood.
It was the stickiest bar you would ever imagine. And it just like, no matter how many times you'd wipe it down, it'd still just be sticky. It was fun though. It was a
good time. What was the craziest thing that you've ever seen happen at the hole?
I think it's just too risky to just like, you know, say on your podcast, but you know, I'll tell you like when we're off air.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Just
all
like
right.
everything went down there. Everything went. I mean, it was just, it was a free for all, you know. And what people don't know is like, there was a downstairs back room, you know. I can't believe people went down there, but it was the scariest place on earth.
It was the scariest place on earth because those downstairs. Candles would blow out and then you couldn't find your way in or out.
Yeah. And yeah, it was just one. Well, there were two entrances, but you know.
Yeah, I mean the nights at the hole, and back then you used to be able to smoke in the bar too.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, yeah.
It was
Lord.
Smoky, dark, janky.
Lord. Well, once we close out, I want all the stories.
Yeah.
Because I remember, oh my God, my gay youth just lost.
It was young. It was fun. Everybody had endless amounts of energy. It was the answer to Chelsea, you know. I mean, you had your East River grunge gay bars, and then you had your Chelsea bars, which were all muscle and tans and stuff like that. And, you know, I chose the dirty, gritty part of New York. I remember I used to do this triangle all the time. It would be the Pyramid Bar, it would be the Hole, and then it would be the Cock, and we would just do that. Me and my friends would just do that triangle.
Yes, the old now. Cock on Avenue B and like 12th.
Yeah,
it? Yeah.
It was on Avenue A and 12th.
Yeah, Avenue and then, A and 12th.
Yes, and then let's not forget about Wonder Bar.
Oh my God, I miss Wonder Bar.
Wonder Bar was one of the first bars I went to when I first moved to the city.
Wonder Bar, and then the Slide. Do you remember the Slide?
The Slide. I went to an underwear party. There was an underwear party at Slide.
Isn't that all they did?
I was just thinking to myself, yeah, it was just all that they did. I was thinking to myself, I'm like, if you're going to go to an underwear party, please make sure you're wearing clean underwear. And why would you wear tidy whites? Anyways, dirty tidy whities. But that's the majority of what they were wearing. They were wearing all dirty whitey tidies at the underwear party.
Oh my goodness. Well, I'm sure a lot of these listeners, at least the young ones, are like, why?
They remember.
Two old queens just running down memory lane, you know?
Yeah, exactly. When it was fun.
Oh my God, those were the days. Oh my goodness. I really want to thank you for taking some time out of your very busy schedule once again.
It was my pleasure.
To come and give us your story and give us an inside look of what's happening from the restaurants on the front lines that are doing the most to help out their communities while still trying to survive themselves. I think it's a really beautiful thing you're doing, and I can't thank you enough.
Thank you.
Let's give us the kids all the information, the Instagram, the GoFundMe, the Venmo, any which way people can help. Let's shout it out now, and then I'll link it out later as well.
All right. So for Instagram, you'll find this all in our bio, but the Instagram handle is Post New York, spelt out one word. It has our GoFundMe in the link in the bio, so check it out. For the Venmo for the employees, it's Post-New York-restaurant. That is the Venmo. So, you know, $2, $3, doesn't matter.
Yeah, and it's going to the staff. And like I said, our front of house staff and back of house staff are suffering the most, you know, these days. So anything helps for sure. I mean, Yeah. And so, and I will, like I said, I will link that all out as well in the podcast notes and on my Instagram, as always. If you have any questions or you want to show me any love, you can always find me at InYoMouthPod or send me an email at InYoMouthNYC@gmail.com. And if you have anything nasty to say, you can always just forward it to at the Bianca Del Rio on Instagram. Once again, thank you to you, Mikey, and a Post Restaurant for just, you know, spending some time with us this beautiful, cloudy New York morning and on this National Jelly Bean Day.
National Jelly Bean Day. It was a pleasure. Yes. It was a pleasure. Thank you, yes, for having me.
And as always, thank you all out there for listening to In Yo Mouth. Yes.